clear and specific. Again, synchronicity is a real phenomenon and is always trying to occur to help you. But cultural forces are always seeking to lure you back into the idea that you live in a dead, secular universe. It's imperative that we stay aware so we don't let opportunities pass us by. While the big synchronicities often force themselves on us, the smaller ones won't. We can all look back and see the more fateful occurrences in our lives. The first big stroke of luck that landed us in a job that started a career, or the day we met the special someone who turned out to be our most cherished long-term relationship. But in between these big synchronicities, a flow of smaller encounters await us. Alertness and boldness are key. Start by noticing who is moving into your energy field. Most synchronicity is delivered to you from other people, and it pays to notice the people who enter a building at the same time you do, or jump in the elevator with you and give you a quick glance. Always be alert to who happens to be seating near you in a restaurant, or who is beside you on an airplane. Also, some synchronistic information will come to you via the chatter that happens to be playing on a television when you walk by. Other helpful messages arrive via your computer when you're aimlessly surfing. Bookstores are especially alive with synchronicity. People are already there to seek information and often report that monumental synchronistic opportunities have happened just because their eyes went to a book across the room that seemed to be illuminated. Sometimes a book will literally fall off the shelves at your feet, as has personally happened to me more than once. Key questions to ask yourself regarding these events are, why did I see this person or receive this bit of information at this particular moment? What have I been thinking about? How does it fit in with my journey? Sometimes merely seeing a person hints at a synchronicity. The person stands out to you, or you get a gut feeling about them. Seeing the same stranger several times in the same day or over a short period of time is especially important. I like to call this phenomenon orbiting. For instance, you might see someone entering a mall and then notice him again at a clothing shop. Finally, you see him at a food court. It does you no good to go home and tell your spouse that you found it interesting seeing the same person three times. You have to explore synchronicity to see the deeper meaning. Here's where boldness comes in. You must find a way to talk to the people you are orbiting. Obviously, the challenge is how exactly to strike up a conversation with a stranger. Certain people feel freer to talk to strangers than others do. But you have to find a way. You have to be bold. A courageous persistence is required when you are ferreting out a synchronicity. So start talking about something, anything, with a person who you think might have a synchronicity for you. The weather as a first subject will do, and see where the conversation goes. And why not? What is the worst that can happen? That a person might look at you aghast and turn his head? So what? My grandfather used to tell me that the secret of a full life is learning to make a fool out of yourself gracefully, and I never forgot it. If someone is put off, just smile and send them energy. In reality, most people are basically friendly and talkative, so give it a try. The bottom line is that you have to explore the situation fully to increase your flow of synchronicity. You never know which conversation will be the one that dramatically changes your life or empowers you with a new understanding of who you are and where you are going. What to do when you lose your flow? Right here, at this point when you're seeking a flow of synchronicity, certain questions commonly arise. Why do I go along for a while, seeing meaningful coincidences, feeling I'm on a synchronistic journey, and then something happens in my life that knocks me out of my flow? What is it that keeps holding me back from the life I know is possible? Answering these questions is absolutely paramount for all of us. When we experience a sudden setback, we're still awake, but our inspiration has dissipated, and we're left wondering how to proceed. Thankfully, at this moment in history, enough research and discussion have occurred to resolve this conundrum, once and for all. When we lose contact with our flow of synchronicity, it usually happens because we're knocked out of it by a stressful life event and are thrown into a feeling of insecurity. The solution to that situation is always the same, as you will recall in the audiobook Scenes on the Mountaintop. You must find a deeper spiritual connection that provides an inner security that sustains us in such moments and moves us back on track. 2. The ability to discover a deeper spiritual connection. The question is how to establish this deeper connection. The good news is that this question has also been explored and resolved during the human potential research. But we have to genuinely seek in order to find. Spirituality is the most personal of decisions, and we once again must shrug off the voices of the secular world seeking to pull us back into unconsciousness. The delusion again tells us that our moments of inspiration were mere self-deception and fantasy. There is no divine force. The universe is still uncaring. Happily, we now know better. Enough people have genuinely established this connection for it to be a growing reality in the world. And how it feels has been thoroughly discussed in a plethora of books. When we experience it ourselves, we see it is exactly as all the sages and saints described. It does give us a peace that surpasses all understanding. We do open up to a download of divine love and inner security. Our consciousness always expands as if we are connecting with our higher intuitive intelligence, one that directs us and helps us to establish a more reliable flow of synchronicity. Such breakthroughs can happen in an instant, but more often, additional time is necessary to crack the full connection. Just know that when we genuinely seek, we always find this reality. It doesn't work some of the time or most of the time. It happens every time if we are patient. And it is your birthright. How spiritual breakthrough happens. Here's what you need to know. If you aren't experiencing synchronicity very much, or if it comes and goes, you must recognize that something very common is occurring. A life stressor has hit you and made you feel insecure and vulnerable, and your habitual defenses have kicked in to make you feel better and more secure, if just for a little while. The life stressor could be any issue or problem that occurs in life, and our defenses are the typical way we act or think that helps deaden the pain, and they can be any activity we can lose ourselves in. Overeating, chasing fun times, anger outbursts, spending money, workaholic obsessions, and OCD behaviors are just a few examples. Theoretically, anything will work as a learned defense, as long as you pursue the activity so intensely that it allows you to withdraw from consciousness for a time and feel better. Too often, some people learn defenses that are more dangerous, such as drugs or crime, and that can be tragic. Knowing your defenses is absolutely paramount to finding a lasting spiritual connection, one that gives you an inner security with which to handle life, so you don't have to waste time going in circles, repeating the self-delusive behavior or distraction that keeps you only semi-conscious. Only then can you truly move forward in your synchronistic journey. Thankfully, the method to break through your defenses and establish inner security has been well explored and is simple. It's a form of meditation that merely requires you to sit alone with yourself, holding the intention to establish divine connection, which would feel like an inner love and security and an opening of the heart experience. Usually, just sitting alone in this manner is enough to get one's defenses to raise their ugly head. They will urge you to get back to your own stress-reducing addictions. In this meditation, you must always be alert to these anxious urges to flee, to get back to your projects, or to pursue fun. Come back to your intention to intensify your emotion of love, even if you have to remember times in the past that you have experienced love in order to summon it up again. However, the love you are looking for is a constant emotional state without an object. And again, be aware of any other emotional states that pop up and merely let them go. The aim of this meditation is to form the habit of always catching yourself as early as possible when other thoughts or emotions knock you out of this connection. The practice is to recognize you have lost your love state as soon as possible and return to your intention of seeking divine connection that replaces the stress. You do this over and over again until you can experience this stable emotional state of love and download of inner security, even bliss, with which you can sustain your flow regardless of the stresses in your life. Gradually, this stable emotional state will become a habit that you can maintain outside of your meditations in your daily life, and you will be free. Along with this inner peace come all the other abilities that allow you to stay out of stress in the first place. That's it. That's all it takes to break through to your deeper connection. The only hard part is to keep at it, to keep practicing this method until you see the results for yourself. Getting started. Getting started is easy. You merely find a place to sit with yourself and then set your intention in the way we discussed previously. Intend to stay fully present in the moment, seeking to connect with a higher emotion of divine love. Let go of any other thought or feeling that is not that. Sometimes you will be swept away by your internal chatter, but merely let it go and return to your intention to connect in the present moment. It's important to make sure you're alone in a quiet place where you won't be disturbed by the outside world. If you have trouble being alone at all at first, the way I did, tough it out anyway. It's that important. After all, many of our defense mechanisms involve losing ourselves in the bustle of social life and conversation and pursuing convivial activities as a way to distract us from facing our insecurities. I always favor a place in the woods where I can feel the energy of a forest, but where you choose to connect is entirely up to you. You just have to be alone with yourself for a while. Even if you can only sit for a few minutes at first, gradually build up to 30 minutes and do it every day for a while. It is guaranteed to change your life. Will you never again lose your flow because of a stressful life event? No, a crisis will happen from time to time. But you now have a proven way of regaining your spiritual connection, and with it, an inner security which gives you the presence of mind to apply another key technique to increase your synchronicity. Finding the positive inherent in all setbacks, sometimes referred to as finding the silver lining in any situation. You see, in reality, most walls we hit in our flow are important events that fine-tune our preparation on the road to our ultimate mission. I know this is difficult, but some apparently negative events are preparing us, toughening us, or directing us in some manner. These events can be regarded as important synchronicities too, pushing us in a different direction. Finding the silver linings in so-called negative events helps keep our synchronistic momentum and instills a greater faith that we are on a path of destiny. It is here where we can view most events positively, that we can develop our highest creative power. 3. Implementing your higher creative power. A heightened prayer or intention force naturally flows from your spiritual connection. Although this was briefly mentioned in Celestine, it was described in most detail in a subsequent book, The Secret of Shambhala. This is your ability to energize and add momentum to any area of your life where you need solutions or to meet a goal. It is your personal creative power. If you are investigating the power of intention for the first time, remember that the world generally disbelieves in prayer or intention power, although there is very good research showing that it absolutely works, as Dr. Larry Dossey has shown. But millions of people have been raised without any understanding of a divine force operating behind the scenes in this world. So at first, they have a knee-jerk reaction against the idea of intention power. Thus, they are left with only the secular hope they'll be lucky in life. Don't let that be you. Be the spiritual scientist. Prove that the universe is designed for you to have a higher level of creativity in your life. Here's how to actualize this creative ability. Remember that through this method, you are seeking to achieve a goal in your life or to resolve a problem, and it works by bringing on more synchronistic flow to address the issue. First, take the time to establish your connection with divine love. Then center yourself in your current situation. It's also advisable to perform a quick check on your ego for a moment, because as the saying goes, you have to be careful what you wish for, because you might just get it. Make sure that you are seeking to create good, positive outcomes for all involved, and that your intention springs from your higher intelligence. Once you feel you're doing the right thing, visualize your intention as completely as you can. Say the intention out loud, but don't merely ask for your goals. State your intention in affirmative language. Declare it as if it were already a reality. If you wonder if using affirmations is desirable, look up the Lord's Prayer in the Christian Bible. It contains phrases that are all declarative. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, give us our daily bread. This scripture doesn't recommend saying, "Please God, if you don't mind, and if I'm worthy enough, grant me these things." This scripture advises that we assert what we want as a faithful affirmation coming from our divine connection. What you do next is very important. Give your intention a burst of faith power by feeling gratitude for it in advance. In other words, feel so confident in your intention that you can already feel thankful for it, and really summon it in yourself. Feel the exact emotion in your heart, gratefulness. This is a long-proven technique that activates your faith power. Many people, once they are familiar with the principles involved, sometimes use a shorthand way of setting intention. They affirm their connection with their intuitive intelligence by calling this force spirit or Holy Spirit, and set their intention for a goal or for their life journey to go well by gratefully saying, "Spirit, bring this to us." Or when a problem arises, they say, "Spirit, resolve this matter," or "keep us safe." What to do when a prayer intention seemingly doesn't work? If your intention doesn't actualize immediately, don't jump to conclusions. I believe we always have to keep our options open and think, "I want this goal or something better." It's always possible that you might be a little off in what you are specifically trying to create. You still get a synchronicity that will guide you somewhere, but it might take a while to realize your higher intelligence wanted a slightly different destiny for you. Which brings us to another spiritual experience and ability that happens when you increase your connection, one that will give you even more synchronicity and a higher clarity about your journey every step of the way. 4. Tune in to your intuitive guidance. Seeking a higher spiritual connection, especially when you add your intention power, makes you more aware of your thoughts and urges. You begin to tune in to another life-changing ability, observing your intuitive guidance. Intuition is more direct proof that spiritual consciousness is real, and one more way the universe is designed to help us. Personal accounts and biographies are full of fortunate moments when someone's intuition led to an action that headed off a disaster, saved someone's life, or brought about an important synchronicity that extended their inspired journey. My favorite intuition story is one I heard from a reliable source, and it has since gone viral. It is the story of a father's inner knowing. A man walked home from work the same way every day with some coworkers who lived nearby, and he enjoyed the lively banter and discussion that took place with his friends. But one particular day, out of the blue, he found himself thinking about taking another route home. The emotional charge on this idea was so large that instead of fighting the urge or rationalizing it away, he excused himself and took the other route, just to see if anything of note might happen. Nothing occurred until he was about a half mile from his house. It was dark by then and no one seemed to be around. Suddenly he heard scuffling up ahead and then a scream. Running toward the scene, he could see a man attempting to assault a teenage girl, although he couldn't see her face. He yelled just in time, and the man fled. He gave chase for a moment, but then went back to check on the girl. It was his daughter. Such stories about intuition are plentiful. But the point is that we can cultivate this intuitive ability and use it to create an even greater synchronistic flow in our lives. Intuitions often call for you to do something or go somewhere where a life-enhancing synchronicity can take place. And often, if you fail to notice and follow the intuition, you miss an inspired moment when your life could have moved in an important direction. So it is important to keep your spiritual connection strong and to learn to detect your guiding intuitions. Intuitions come to you in a variety of ways. Some are ideas grasped as a whole and motivate you to do or create something. Some will be images that flash across your mind showing yourself taking a certain action. Other times you will experience a gut urge to act in a particular manner. To detect your intuitions, it helps to first learn to distinguish them from ordinary thoughts by learning how each feels in your mind. An ordinary thought is one where you ponder a situation or decision by logically talking to yourself in words, like you might speak to another person, considering options or ways to solve problems or to get a project accomplished. This kind of ego thought can also be part of what your ego tells you when you feel insecure and your habitual defenses are up, urging you to unconsciously pursue the crutches you use to feel better. An intuition, on the other hand, merely drops into the back of your mind without any impetus on your part, although it might appear as a solution while you're thinking. The point is that intuitive guidance is always given to you as a helpful gift, making suggestions from a higher place in your intelligence. To sharpen your perception, ask yourself, why did I think that now? Why did I feel an urge to act at this moment? Why did I see this vision of myself stepping forward in some way? How intuitive urges feel is another clue. Intuitions always come with a bit of inspired energy. It seems important to act. It feels like a forward step in your life movie. If intuition comes and you're still not clear on how to go forward, remember that some intuitions are about activities further in the future. I once saw the whole vision of the Celestine Prophecy while meditating in an old-growth forest. I saw the writing, the completed book, and the way it would be passed around the world. Of course, I had no idea that it would happen. I didn't even know what the subject would be. It seemed like a fantasy, until a stream of synchronicity began that allowed the vision to come true. So write down your life visions and look over them periodically. Some intuitions won't be clear until other events occur to reveal their meaning. Once you do get clear about the intuition, your next step is also very important. Don't just dive in. Give the proposed action a logic test. Ask yourself, is it realistic? How should I proceed to give it the best chance of working? But don't let the fact that it might seem somewhat impractical stop you necessarily. When I decided to quit my job and write Celestine, it was a long shot at best. Yet the inspiration was so high that I decided to do just that. I put in my resignation, cashed in my retirement account, and gave it a shot. Yet it's wise never to bet the house on any one project. I also found part-time work as a spiritual counselor at a local Unity church to make ends meet. Some intuitions, of course, don't give you much time to consider logic, such as the ones that come up in the middle of a conversation when you are suddenly urged to bring up a new subject or to say something very personal to someone. In that case, I would suggest checking to make sure that you're not saying it merely to build up your own ego and that you think it would be a positive for the other person, then let loose with it. After all, your motivation is to help, and in effect, you are proving to yourself that the cosmic design of the universe centers around helping. Sometimes you are helped, and other times you are called to help others. And if you stay in alignment with this principle, your life flow takes off even more. 5. The ability to stay in karmic alignment. What if I told you that every time you intuitively help someone, using your intuitive intelligence to give them a life-changing synchronicity, a check for a certain amount of money would come in the mail? Would you believe it? Of course, I'm speaking symbolically here, but I believe you can prove to yourself that the universe is set up to work exactly in this manner. Small business owners have proven it to themselves for years, and you can confirm their experience just by observation. What all small businesses know is that they have to take care of their customers, meaning they must always think and act in their customers' best interest. They must give them good value. They must not sell them anything they don't need. And if they can't help them, they must honestly communicate that fact. In short, they have to be givers. When they do, the word gets out that they shoot straight and genuinely want to help. And what happens? Business increases. And if they don't act in this positive manner, what happens? The word gets out quickly, their reputation suffers, and they soon go out of business. People can tell when we manipulate or lie. We see it over and over. But does this principle go deeper? You can prove to yourself that it does. For instance, businesses that genuinely put the customer first also draw out-of-town or internet customers more readily. They will tell you that customers find them in mysterious ways, talking about the energy of the web pictures or that the color scheme of the website drew them in. Obviously, for the takers, this doesn't happen. They draw in other manipulators and controllers who try to take unfair advantage of them. Why do so many people seem to still act in this negative manner? Again, it is because the dead universe scientists have convinced them that it doesn't matter, that the universe doesn't care. They imply, it might be unethical, but why not manipulate to take better care of ourselves? Nobody else will. And of course, for them, nobody does. So what is the precise karmic design playing out here? It's obvious. Those of us who are givers in this world mysteriously draw in more people who are also givers, who show up to give us energy or support or mysterious information just at the right time, so our lives go easier and we stay more inspired. It's that simple and that spectacular. When we move in harmony with this operating program, this act immediately supercharges our lives. And this happens regardless of our age or when we start. It's never too late. So set an intention to be of the greatest service possible for the people in your life, and begin to concentrate on what intuitive information you receive to give others. The guidance you receive to help could be about anything, a recent discovery of your own, something you sense they need, even just envisioning a boost of energy coming from your divine connection to them. But whatever comes to you to say or do, never fail to act on it. You are often there to be a synchronicity for the people you cross paths with. And the more you help in this way, the more people will show up to be a synchronicity for you. This is the place to ask yourself, how would the world change if everyone was suddenly acting in karmic alignment? Everyone's creative flow would surge, and they would more quickly find their true missions to shine light on and replace the corruption. Also, don't forget there is one other way, as you'll remember from the audiobook, to amplify your good karma: tithing. Tithing is not just a religious concept. It is a powerful spiritual technique, eminently provable, that is also fun and effective. I suggest practicing tithing in the following way. Decide to give a percentage of your money away to others, especially to the ones who have given something to you. Starting small is okay, but intend to get to the magical level of 10%. And remember that money is only a form of energy, flowing back to you according to how you use it. Let your intuition guide you on where to give the money. There's nothing more interesting than to have a certain amount of cash in your pocket and waiting alertly for what to do with it. You know something mysterious is going to occur to direct you, and if you keep your eyes open, it always will. 10% seems to be the number that most activates money energy coming back to you as a result of your tithing. And if you are just trying tithing, you'll soon see that it will. Some scriptures say that tithing is the only place where you can actually test the system and give with a full expectation that it will come back to you multiplied many times. I think, as Celestine suggests, that ultimately tithing will become our official economy on earth. But for now, just prove to yourself that it works, and realize that alignment with karmic design makes us all luckier, more inspired, and conscious enough to greatly improve one of our most cherished possessions, our relationships. 6. Healing your relationships. The ability to develop highly conscious relationships is another key way spiritual connection improves and inspires our lives. Remember, using intention to systematically connect spiritually downloads our inner security. This is important because many of the ills that befall our relationships concern security issues. When we feel insecure in our lives, we tend to make others our reason for living and our fallback support during hard times. Some of this is natural and can be elements of mutual caring and support, but only if it is done consciously and the power balance is equal in the relationship. This is especially true if the relationship is a romantic one. When this balance is not in place, problems arise. But of course, you know that. Rest assured that all the abilities we've talked about naturally fix most relationships. But inner security is paramount because it centers you in your life movie and keeps you from merely becoming a minor actor in someone else's story. Being a minor player ruins the balance of power in a relationship and activates unconscious control dramas, as you heard. To establish a conscious relationship, each person must become inwardly secure and therefore not dependent on energy from the other. This produces equal power balance effortlessly. Remember that when you are centered in your spiritual connection, there is an endless supply of energy. Thus, with both people giving energy to each other, there is even more energy for helping to brainstorm goals, sorting through the meaning of synchronicities, and sharing parenting duties. But what if you have aspired to all that, and some of the people you are in relationship with are not yet interested in making the spiritual jump or are presenting very entrenched control dramas toward you? What do you do then, especially if you want to work on saving the relationship? First, remember how control dramas get started in the first place. When people feel insecure, they do things to feel better in various ways. We don't just have to defend against our own hurts and anxieties. We also have to defend against others who we think are trying to put us down or otherwise manipulate us to steal our energy. When someone puts us down, we sense that we are under attack and pay attention to them. Because where attention goes, energy flows. They get a hit of energy from us and we feel diminished. So we tend to fight back by putting them down or manipulating them in return to get the energy back. As you heard in Celestine, this is the game played by too many, keeping too much conflict and corruption in the world. But this is all ego stuff, of course, developed initially in insecure families. You already know the cure is to always be spiritually connected, so we have our own centered inner security, which gives us an endless supply of energy, regardless of who is trying to steal it. We don't have to play these games any longer. Here's what to do. Simply stay connected with the person, giving them energy, and then name their game. For instance, if you are facing a poor me drama in which the person wants to make you feel guilty about something you didn't intend to do, simply say, "I am feeling that I'm being forced to feel guilty." And stick to that. Don't defend yourself. Just keep explaining your experience of the situation. Keep sending love. They might need to retreat, but you aren't affected. You are a giver, secure in yourself. You cleared an inauthentic game by expressing authentic honesty. You offered your experience of the situation. Whether the other person wants to or not, in response to your authenticity, they will find themselves becoming more authentic as well. And since you aren't disconnecting, it opens the door to talk about true feelings in a relationship. Sometimes it's the aloof control drama you're facing, and the person is using distancing or mystification to get you to keep asking questions in order to win your energy. Collapse their game by giving them energy anyway and authentically saying, "I feel like I really can't get to know you because you don't share details about yourself." Similarly, if you are facing an interrogator who bids for energy by constantly finding something to criticize about you, simply say that you feel criticized and put down when you are with them. They will feel your energy and authentic sincerity and, again, will grow more authentic themselves right in front of your eyes. The same name-the-game approach also works for the most aggressive control drama, the intimidator, trying to get energy from you by telling you they are going to blow up or do something crazy, literally trying to scare you into giving them energy. Gently name the game, but be careful. Sometimes it is more prudent to remove yourself from the situation. As you can see, the secret to conscious relationships is to prioritize inner security, authentic truth-telling, and a higher giving of energy. Because as you heal and enlighten those you are close to, you begin to gather around you all the support you need to synchronistically increase your flow and intuitive giving. And there, in the observation of your natural pattern of giving, you begin to remember your mission. 7. Remembering your mission. As you engage life more consciously, looking out for others' best interests as well as your own, and listening intuitively for the best way to help, a clarity about your life purpose emerges. You begin to see a pattern in the truth you're telling others. It could be about any aspect of life, wellness, teaching, government, coaching, business, or a myriad of other areas. Or it could be something totally unique that the world needs. Certainly, each of us can help in a variety of ways, but often we realize at any age that all of our experiences have prepared us to help in a very specific way. We can see it in the way our intuitions are guiding us and the opportunities synchronicity is bringing us. We feel that we are on a journey, ultimately headed towards some particular place or situation where we can help evolve the world forward. Here's what I think we've discovered about this process. It's not about being recognized or famous. Fame in a lot of ways can hinder this process. It's about knowing yourself and staying on a path with heart. Here's a way to explore your sense of mission. Sit back for a moment, intending in gratitude that you get the clearest picture you can of your life purpose. Remember, all the turning points in your life can be viewed in retrospect as synchronicities. So start with your parents and relatives. Why did you choose, or why were you placed with this family? What could you possibly have had in mind? These are the people who taught you, or didn't, what the world's about, what they felt was important, how you should fit in. Ask yourself how you felt about these first influencers. What did you think was true about their worldview? What did you think was a little off? What might have been an uncompleted mission of one of your parents or relatives? Is your journey moving you toward completing that same mission? Think about it seriously. How you reacted to your early life situation is your first clue to what you might want to do in your life. How would you have changed your early circumstances if you could have? Now go on to think about the other important people in your early life. Who were your favorite teachers? What did they give you that was important in your early learning about the world? And who were the early friends that you gravitated toward? What synchronicities did they provide? What were your early interests in school? Why did you choose particular subjects to study? Looking back, was there a synchronicity that led to your very first job? Go on now and review the other major synchronicities that brought other important people into your life, perhaps even your spouse. What were the synchronistic meanings involved in your education work up to the present moment? What have your children or other children taught you? Most important in viewing all the synchronicity in your life up to this point, ask yourself one critical question. What has all this input and influence prepared you to now go out and tell the world about living and experiencing a greater life? This is your current clarity about your mission. And it never really finalizes. All your life, you will gain an even better idea of what you came to this world to accomplish. Your truth or gift will always be evolving as the world becomes more spiritually connected. 8. Integrate your abilities into a spiritual worldview. All of the preceding information we've reviewed here began as a discussion of how to stay awake and find a higher path in life. We talked about your ability to increase a flow of synchronicity in your life and why you must cultivate an additional ability, connecting spiritually at a higher level, in order to do so. Then we showed how intention power, intuition, karmic alignment, better relationships, and a sense of destiny and mission were all abilities that spring from this higher connection. Now it's time to explore how these abilities all integrate seamlessly into what might be called a Celestine worldview. This, of course, is a worldview based on doing our part to evolve the world and to replace the corruption that is so alarming with a new, more spiritually connected culture. It is crucially important that we remind ourselves that all we have to do is live this consciousness out loud in order to build a better world. It is not a war. To let our alarm over corruption turn into hate is to join the dark side. The love connection we hold is what accomplishes everything, because when we live and talk about this consciousness, we become positively contagious to others. Remember, every soul is designed to pop into this inspired life. Imagine how a spiritual culture might feel and look. You wake up in the morning, and because you have practiced spiritual connection, mostly taming your old defensive habits by downloading your love-based inner security, you might quickly tune in and strengthen that connection. Your emotion would be one of love. This connection would give you a morning hit of inspiration as you check for your most prominent questions and wonder when the first synchronicity will happen to answer them. You set a fast affirmation that these answers will appear, including the intention that your day will unfold calmly and safely, and certain intuitions will guide you to the mysterious coincidences you anticipate. When you arrive at work, perhaps you step into a project or goal. Let's say you must develop a marketing plan for a new herbal-based nutritional supplement that has the ability to replace a drug that has many harmful side effects. First, you again give the project a hit of affirmative intention that the marketing plan will be created smoothly and will be effective in letting the public know the product is out there. And because you know to align with karmic design, you add something else to do. Personally research the supplement for yourself so you'll know you are working for a cause that helps people. Next, you might follow the idea to use logic first. You begin a logical, practical approach to the task. You research the state of the art in today's world of marketing, but in the end you realize these approaches aren't quite right for your project. You hold your question about this in mind, setting a more precise affirmative intention to find a better way. Perhaps you spend some time alone strengthening your spiritual connection, focusing on your intuitive thoughts. For some reason, it comes to you to head to the park for a walk during lunch, which feels like an energizing idea. You know it is perhaps a guiding intuition, so you go. Lots of things come to your mind as you stroll, tasks at home, an upcoming vacation, maybe some anxiety over the pressure to complete the project, which brings up one of your defensive habits, which is to lose yourself in obsessive work. You even think about going back to the office to dig in. But you remind yourself that you are working and return to love and calm as your emotional base. Suddenly your eye goes to a park bench near a big tree and you go over and sit down, realizing that there is a group of people on the other side of the tree talking loudly and eating their lunch. You almost leave because of the noise, but you stay and you can't help but overhear the conversation. As you listen, you feel an elevation of your energy. They're discussing life and culture and the level of complete manipulation in commercial advertising. "Why," a woman in the group says, "can't businesses just tell the truth about what they're selling without all the hype and deception?" And it hits you like a boulder. You think, "That's right. Why can't businesses just tell the truth?" In that instant, you know you have your answer as to how you will proceed with the marketing plan. You'll just tell the truth in the clearest possible way. This supplement works, and it's a great replacement for the drug, as long as you lower the amount of sugar in your diet and get the proper amounts of other key nutrients. You return to the office with your conclusions. Explain how you reached them, and your workmates listen, beginning to appreciate spiritual consciousness in a new way. Now, what did the above visualization convey? It shows that when enough of us live like this, others will notice and begin to explore this life for themselves, because it is so effective, fun, and monumentally important. To get to this reality, All we have to do is slow down and live our spiritual abilities. The universe is designed for all of this to happen. We only have to honestly live it out loud and take the time to explain it to others. I hope you can sense the critical mass already building for this new outlook, already motivating a wave of people to enter human culture with a new consciousness and a contagious energy, becoming relentless helpers and reformers. We can all tune into this love wave and then allow ourselves to be ever guided into the right place at the right time to make a difference. We hope you join in, because this higher approach offers us the best life possible and will evoke the only consciousness that can possibly save the world. James Redfield, Seaside, Florida, June 2018. For more, visit CelestineVision.com. Author's note. For more than a half century, a new consciousness has been entering the human world, an awareness that could only be called transcendent, deeply spiritual. If you find yourself listening to this audiobook, then perhaps you already sense what is happening, already feel it inside. At this moment in history, we seem to be especially attuned to our own life process, to those coincidental events that have meaning in our lives and that occur at just the right time and bring forth just the right individuals to suddenly send our paths in a new, inspiring direction. Perhaps more than in any other time period, we seem to intuit higher meaning in these mysterious happenings. We know that life is really about a spiritual unfolding that is personal and enchanting and magical, an unfolding that no philosophy or religion has yet fully clarified. And we know something else as well. We know that once we do understand what is happening and how to turn on this growth and keep it on, the human world will take a quantum leap into a whole new way of life, one that it has been struggling to achieve throughout human history. The following story is offered toward this new understanding. If it touches you, if it crystallizes something that you perceive in your life, then pass on what you see to another. For I think our new awareness of the spiritual is expanding in just this way, no longer through hype or fad, but personally, through a kind of positive contagion among people. All any of us have to do is suspend our doubts and distractions just long enough, and miraculously, this reality can be our own. James Redfield, Fall 2018.
Hi, I'm speaking today with James and Sally Redfield, two authors who, for many years, clearly have had a lot more on their minds than simply book sales. James, was there some specific event that got you started on the road that you're traveling today?
You know, what happened to me was that I was in graduate school, and it was the days of the human potential movement. So there was a lot of talk about a human destiny and fulfilling ourselves and self-actualization and those kinds of things. And it dawned on me that there was a consensus forming about how to achieve a deeper, not just psychological health, but a spiritual experience. And the book really began with an attempt to create a spiritual psychology. I started it as in an academic form at first, and then I realized, you know, this is a story. This has to be based on my experiences and other people's experiences. And out of that came the Celestine Prophecy.
And Sally, how did you get drawn into this work, and how also has your role evolved over the years?
Well, my undergraduate degree is in sociology, and I'm a certified life coach, so I'm really about observing behavior and understanding how we can have a richer life, a positive life. And then I met James, and together we did the first self-published edition of the book, and it really met my need to go out and to help people. And then my role has now evolved into my own books and my own tapes, and then working on the film about the book.
So when the two of you went on the journey of publication to self-publish The Celestine Prophecy in 1993, I guess I just have to ask, what were your expectations at the time for how wide an audience you imagined it would reach?
Well, I thought, because of the feedback I was getting as I passed around the raw manuscript, that it did touch a note with people, that it did put maybe into words what a lot of people were experiencing. So it was a risk for us to create our own little publishing company to send this book out. But we really felt it would find a home out there, and it
so
did.
No sense of, yes, I think this could sell 10,000 copies. I mean, did you, any kind of a feeling for what was going to happen?
Well, absolutely. We would have been happy with about 100,000 copies sold. And it did much more than that, of course.
Yeah. I mean, despite the considerable success of your other books, The Celestine Prophecies ended up being, I think, one of those rare milestones in publishing history, really. I mean, book sales, I believe, have now exceeded 12 million copies. So I know that this was the first time that your ideas became available to a mass audience. But is there anything about your experience writing it that might explain how that particular volume came to strike such a resonance point with so many people?
I think it just put into words what so many of us were feeling at the same time. We were reaching a point, I believe, where there was a hunger for a real spiritual experience. We all have our beliefs. We all have our religious tradition that we come from. But what was missing was a feeling of the real experience that's behind all religion. So I think the book talks and focuses on that experience. Regardless of what we call ourselves in terms of religion, it's the experience that really inspires us, that really gives us an angle and a consciousness in life that lifts us up, makes it all worthwhile, gives us meaning that energizes everything else that we do. And that's the awakening, I think, that we were all looking for, and the book helped clarify that.
Sally, to what do you attribute the way the book was embraced? Do you have anything to add to that?
I think probably what I would add is that James talked about control dramas, and a lot of us were familiar with those, especially if we're in a family environment, which most of us are, a work environment, and I think we thought, oh yeah, I know people who behave that way. I think eventually we had to start saying, oh yeah, I know I behave that way. So he definitely, I believe, put that into a way that was non-threatening. We could look at it.
James, at the time you wrote the book, you felt that we were on the verge of achieving a critical mass in spiritual awakening. I'm just wondering whether the nearness of the millennium affected your thinking in any way.
At that time, I felt as though we were building a critical mass. And I was very careful not to put any time frame on when that critical mass might occur. And what I mean simply by critical mass is that enough of us focusing on spirituality, that spirituality becomes something we can talk about. It's not a personal thing. It can be discussed, especially the experiences about spirituality. Now, no one can deny that concepts about a deeper spirituality and yoga. I saw karma in a golf magazine the other day. No one can deny that the vocabulary of spiritual searching is not in our culture. It is. So I believe we're still in that building of a critical mass. You know, has the world changed? Some people might argue that the world has actually gone backwards since then.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, you know, I know I had a great hope about the millennium that it was going to somehow slingshot us around into some wham kind of place. So a dozen years have passed since The Celestine Prophecy was mass published, and the millennium is behind us. So how do you both think we're doing?
Well, I would just say that I believe we're exactly on track, because what had to happen was that we had to reach a degree of spiritual interest and self-work and awareness so that we could really awaken to the real spiritual dimension that's here with us in this life and open up to it. Now, unfortunately, the first thing that happened as we inched up a little bit in consciousness is that spirituality became the topic. It became the center stage. But there's still a lot of fear in the world. And so what we're doing is now arguing about whose religion is best. All war, all terrorism that we see out there is about whose religion is best. So maybe we have inched up in spirituality to a degree, but we're still hung up in the ideology and the battle over
factionalized
ideology. That's correct. So what's happening, I believe, is that it's just a challenge, a hump in the road that we have to get through until we realize that there is an experience, a core experience beneath all religion that all the mystics of every religion talk about and focus not on the ideological differences, but the commonality of that experience. Can we really move into an era of peace that so many of us hope and believe in?
Sally, I'm going to ask you the same question. 12 years have passed. It's like with all the stuff that's going on, how do you think we're doing?
Well, you know, one of the most exciting things that I'm seeing right now is everybody's wanting to know their purpose. Not only are we acknowledging we have a purpose, but we're eager to know what that is. And I think 12 years ago, we did not see that in a large community. We didn't see people as curious about that. At least young people weren't as curious. And now I'm seeing that it transcends age. Everybody's saying, okay. Well, not everybody, but a lot of people are saying, okay, I'm here to do something, and what is that, and how will I find that?
I know you feel that each of us must discover our personal mission. So how do you view what you do? Do you feel you're teachers, motivators, leaders of a movement? How do you position yourselves, I mean, to the public and maybe in your own minds too?
Well, I think, first of all, we're writers, and we hold a kind of vision, a kind of philosophy that we think is one that helps open all of us to a deeper spirituality. And when I say deeper spirituality, I mean all the things that come with that. You know, there's a sense of well-being that's better than any antidepressant you can find. And that's a real state of being that you can discover for oneself. It's a spiritual opening. It's what the mystics all talk about. It's a part of our brain that we can get to fire off. It's some DNA that we can get to become active, not just become latent. It's out there, and that experience is available to everybody. And the only thing that holds us back really is doubting that it's really there for us, mm-hmm. or that it's an ideological concept, not an experience. Mm-hmm. So we're just, messengers.
A couple of writers?
A couple of writers who are talking about more than writing, talking about our own growth and our psychology and how we can open up this deeper experience. Intuition is something that comes from that connection. Mm-hmm. A sense of a kind of inner guidance that takes us into a place where doors open if we follow our intuition, and our a sense of mission that once we start opening these doors, we realize we're being guided toward. That's at the depth of a spiritual experience. It's not just a matter of belief or a matter of reverence. It's a matter of firing on all cylinders and having the greatest life we can have.
How about you, Sally?
I think for me, too, yes, I am a writer, and I'm also someone who's really trying to live these principles and forgiving myself on the days that I cannot. And hopefully I'm inspiring others to live their own joyful lives as well.
As we do this interview, we're relatively close to the feature film version of The Celestine Prophecy coming out. Can you talk a little bit about what it was like to take such a revered book and shift it into a story that could be told on film?
It was very exciting. We waited a long time to find the right group of people that could come together and make this movie. And the movie happened totally in congruence with the philosophy that we were talking about in the movie. All the people showed up in the right time. A lot of people learned about intuition and it learned about speaking out, and individuals saved the day on the set routinely. But in the end, I think we have a film that is deep and is very true to the book, in the sense that it can be a model for this spiritual life that we talk about in the book.
So you found that the transferring of the book into a script, you were able to do it without having to give up stuff?
Well, you know, I wrote the first draft of the screenplay. So while we tinkered with it, and the other producers tinkered with it, and the director came in and tinkered with it. At least it was the basic screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt really happy that we stayed on task, that the readers will recognize the heart of the book in this film.
Sally, I'm going to ask this of you. What do you hope that the film will accomplish in relation to the rest of the work you're doing?
I really hope that the movie becomes a community event. That's my biggest wish for it, and that people will go in groups to see it. They'll experience it together. They'll have dinner conversation, book club conversations, maybe even workshop conversations about it.
And I'm going to ask a last question of each of you, and I don't know if this is a fair question to ask, but if you could turn a switch that would modify or shift one aspect of our collective consciousness, boom, and we've just all of a sudden shifted way ahead, what would that aspect be for each of you?
I think for me, I would love to see less sensationalization of personality and more appreciation for deeper understanding and deeper spirituality within people.
And I think the switch I would flip is the one that allows us to look at the world in a new way, to find beauty there, to realize that when we look on a beautiful place, it goes through a screen of our attitudes. And if we're too busy to really see, our minds are occupied with other things, if we're too much in our heads, we don't really see the depth of beauty that's here in this world where we live. And once we start to see that beauty, spirituality follows.
Great. James and Sally, this has been a pleasure and an inspiration. So thank you both for speaking with us today.
Thank you.
Enjoyed it.
This has been a Time Warner Audiobooks production of The Celestine Prophecy, written by James Redfield and read by Lou Diamond Phillips. Executive producer, Maya Thomas. Produced and directed by Bob Walter. Production supervised by Dennis Kao. The Celestine Prophecy is also available in print from Warner Books. To listen to samples or read about the author, please visit Time Warner Audiobooks website at twbookmark.com/audiobooks. This audiobook is a work of fiction. Names, characters, places, and incidents are either the product of the author's imagination or are used fictitiously, and any resemblance to actual persons, living or dead, events, or locales is entirely coincidental.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.